Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone, episode 46. My name is Kieran Tavam, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and deputy editor for Women's Soccer Zone, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
I'm good, Kieran, and welcome back to the shores. Good to see that you had a nice little vacation. I would use one myself, to be honest with you.
Yeah, visiting the fatherland. Just returned from 10 days in Sri Lanka, so been busy catching up on what's been going on in the world of women's football or women's soccer, whichever you refer to it, depending on which part of the world you are from. But it's been good, mate. Good break, but ready to rock and roll with what's going on in the world of women's football, because there's been a lot, and we're going to try and cover as much as we can in this episode. And I think probably the best place to start is the commencing of the Women's Super League Spring Series that kicked off this past weekend. There were a few games that took place. There were a few games that were postponed due to Manchester City Manchester City being in the Women's Champions League. We're going to talk about that shortly. They would have been playing Chelsea this weekend, but that game has been rearranged. And Arsenal Ladies game with Notts County Ladies was also due to take place, and we will explain why that didn't in a couple of minutes. But let's just go through the results that did happen. Reading got a very good 3-1 win away at Bristol City. Now, I think Bristol City are a team that are going to surprise a few people this year. I think whether they gain loads of points, I'm not too sure, but I think what they showed in that game against Reading, and also in the game that they had about a week or two ago against Manchester City Women in the FA Cup, which was a close one. I think we discussed it on a previous show, where City won very late on with a goal from Nikita Paris. I think City are well organised. They've got some good young players. Willie Kirk, the manager there, has done a really good job since he took over a couple of years ago. And I think that they will be a team that will impress in this spring series. How many points they gain, I'm not too sure, but I think they will show that they can be competitive. But a good win for Reading. A lot of rebuilding for them over the off-season. A lot of players have gone out. A few players have come in as well. So good result for them. The other games that took place, it was a 0-0 draw between Birmingham City and Sunderland Ladies. Sunderland Ladies obviously in the news over the off-season, going back to a part-time setup rather than full-time, which has seen a few players depart. But a good result for them against FA Cup finalists Birmingham. And we should mention that, JJ, before we carry on with the WSL, the FA Cup, the final will take place at Wembley on May the 13th, and it's going to be Birmingham City against Manchester City. Birmingham knocking out Chelsea on penalties, and Manchester City overcoming Liverpool Ladies narrowly 1-0 thanks to a goal from Melissa Lawley. Now, unfortunately, there are two stories that have dominated the WSL this week, mate, and I know that you've seen them in the US, and I'll get your take on them, because I've just chatted for about 2 minutes and not let you get a word in. But the first one I want to discuss is another game that took place this weekend. Yeovil Ladies 1, Liverpool Ladies 4. Now, the first thing I want to mention is congratulations to Sarah Wiltshire. Sarah made her return and scored 11 weeks after giving birth to her first child, which is quite frankly ridiculous. We saw last week Sydney Leroux and Amy Rodriguez both score on their return after giving birth, but it wasn't quite 11 weeks for them. I can't even begin to imagine how Sarah's done that, JJ.
No, I really can't either. And I know you say ridiculous. That's just crazy in my book. I mean, hey, fair play to her. You know, the player who always wants to be in the mix and in the fold, get right back after. And she gave a little bit of a nice account of herself and a welcome back into professional football, you know. Goal scorers need to score a goal, so she scored a goal.
Yeah, the crazy thing is that she scored that goal for Yeovil 11 weeks after giving birth. She was playing for her husband's team. Her husband, Steve, manages further down the women's football pyramid. He manages Cambridge United Women. She was playing for them about 4 weeks after giving birth, which, I mean, it's just insane. But Sarah's highly committed, I know, to the game. She's got one of those people who dedicates so much time to it, and I'm almost certain that when she was able to be up and about, she was probably running around football pitches and trying to get fit. But incredible from her, so I wanted to give her a shout out. Unfortunately though, mate, the game was actually dominated by Liverpool Ladies, not because they won the game 4-1. We should actually commend them for that, because it's a good result to go to Yeovil and get that win. But they actually had to play the game in Yeovil's away kit because they forgot their own. Well, I'm assuming they forgot their own because they weren't wearing it. Now, this has happened before in the men's game. We've seen it happen where men's teams have forgotten their kit and they've had to wear the opposition's alternate kit to the one that they're not wearing. But this game was being streamed on the BBC website. Now, this is the first WSL game that has been streamed on the BBC website. They are doing this, I think, a few games over the course of the spring series. There's only one word that comes to mind for me, and that's embarrassing. Because for a game that is being streamed live for the first time on the BBC website, to forget your kit and have to play in your opposition strip is quite frankly unacceptable.
It is. I mean, we were talking about this before recording. Not only addition to that, but Liverpool announced that they, had a new kit sponsor for the year. So this is a great opportunity for that company to get some exposure on, the first streamed game of the season on a nationally known website. And yeah, when you show up wearing the other team's jersey, yeah, that's not a good day. I mean, we don't ever like to call heads, but I've seen it in other sports here in America. The equipment manager who forgets jerseys usually doesn't have a job come the next week. I mean, that's not to say that's the only job, but that's pretty important thing to make sure that players have all the things that they need at that time. And if you can't provide them with their kit, then, well, what are you, quite frankly, really doing there?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that it's a first strike for that individual. I wouldn't want someone to lose their job over it. I mean, there's very little money in the women's game as it is. The person who is the kit person could possibly even be a volunteer, mate. I'm not even sure, but it's ridiculous, really, for that to happen, for it to be live on BBC, and for the two teams to be playing in Yeovil's kits is, as I say, it's unacceptable. It's embarrassing, and I hope someone is reprimanded for it, but I hope they don't lose their job over it. I hope it's a telling off, and we don't see it again. But not a great look for the league, and as you say, for the new sponsor Avon, a big loss for them. And I'm sure it was an awkward conversation that Liverpool ladies had to have with them this week. But we move on, and hopefully we don't see that happening again. The reason that I'm a bit disappointed with what happened at Yeovil with Liverpool ladies is because it comes a few days after a really big piece of bad news came out of the league with Notts County Ladies, who were FA Cup finalists a couple of years ago, played at Wembley against Chelsea Ladies. They folded because the club has run up debts that the new owner is unable to or unwilling to, I'm not too sure, to be able to settle with HMRC, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs in the United Kingdom. And as a result of that, players are now jobless, and some of which will be homeless because, like I'm sure there are clubs in the United States, there are clubs over here that own houses that players live in. And I'm almost certain that with the club now folding, those players will be turfed out because they are no longer employees of that club. A really sad situation, mate. We've seen it in the USA where entire leagues have folded, but we haven't seen it over here in England for quite some time, and it's a really, really big shame for those players affected.
Well, two talking points, Kieran, come up for me when talking about this. I mean, obviously, you mentioned before the Sunderland situation where they dropped from a full-time to a part-time club, where they then lost a lot of their marquee players because, let's face it, if you're a full-time player, you want full-time salary. You're not just going to be settling for cut wages or really loss of any wages for that matter. You expect to have that level of professionalism and move forward. That's going to be very, very tough for really anybody to hear for Notts County. I mean, you said to me prior to that the players had 15 minutes maybe of knowledge about this before this news went public. I mean, I was even reading on the train when I was going into work that some players may, excuse me, may have not even known about that because they weren't looking at their phones or their emails, and they saw on social media that now they don't have a job. That, I think, is to me the real rough part. I can appreciate the fact that the owner was straightforward about the whole thing. He said, look, this is exactly what happened. Now, going into your assumptions of whether, this was something that they couldn't figure out or they were unwilling to figure out, that's, I can't make any, thoughts about that because we don't have the facts and we may never have those facts, but that's something that's rough. And the second thing that I want to talk about, remember a couple of weeks ago when you and I said it was interesting they named the national team roster or the England roster for the Euros before the WSL season starting? Well, there may have been a couple of Notts County players on there, and now what are they going to be doing for a couple of months? Just sitting around waiting for matches because they're not going to be in form.
There's four, mate. There's four. Carly Telford, Laura Bassett, Jade Moore, Joe Potter, all in that England squad for the Euros, all now without a club. And there's uncertainty as to what will happen with them because we are now outside of the FAWSL transfer window. So unless the FA are going to make any special kind of amendment to the rules or make an exception on the basis that this is a unique situation, those players are going to struggle to play anywhere because essentially we're in a window where players can't sign for anyone.
I mean, this is a massive issue right now if you're England. I mean, you just named, probably the one or the two goalie, Carly Telford. You have, I think, probably a starting defender and Laura Bassett. I mean, that's just a couple of names they said. Who are the other ones?
Yeah, so I think Carly will be the third choice goalkeeper, no doubt about that. She'll be behind Siobhan Chamberlain and Karen Bardsley. Laura Bassett, as you say, could well be a starter at the Euros, no doubt about that. And the other two are Joe Potter and Jade Moore. Jade Moore has been used a lot by Mark Sampson recently in that holding midfield role. And if he does decide to play a back three, Joe Potter has been the player that he has gone for who has played on the left side of that back three. So, yeah, there are potentially three players there who could be starters in that team. And as we say, with goalkeepers, you never know. Carly Telford could be called upon. So you've got four players there potentially who are not going to kick a ball between now and the Euros.
And I mean, look, it's not unheard of that players are unattached with clubs. I mean, José Bélanger for the longest time was not attached or affiliated with any team. Rhian Wilkinson with Canada was not attached with any team for a while, but they're still in the national team setup. But that's one, maybe two players in a roster. You're talking about a percentage of a 23 that's not going to get a touch of the ball. I mean, I hope that there's going to be some sort of amendment to see all these players now. Maybe it might not be playing in the first division, or you might only be able to play X amount of matches in the first division as like those guest player rules that you have down in Australia's W League. But look, that's an issue. I mean, that's a secondary issue in the grand scheme of things because you're talking about what, 20 some odd players plus backroom staff who are going to be jobless. I mean, that's the real issue right now. And when you look around, from an outsider's perspective, you recognize Notts County. I mean, they're not a men's Premier League side, but, they've been around the block a fair amount. They obviously have a nice big stadium. They play in the women's team plays in the men's stadium. I mean, it seemed like they had some backing, but, now all of a sudden that's by the wayside. And, oh, by the way, what are they going to do come fall when, we have this whole setup that they want to go fall to spring in the USL? Who's going to take their place? Are they going to promote two teams from the Premier League to join WSL 2? What's going to happen here? We don't know.
No, we don't. We don't. And you're right. We focus a little bit on those four players that are going to be representing England. But as you say, there are a number of players, a number of coaching staff. The projections that the chairman said in his statement, or the owner said in his statement, that it was projected that it would cost around £500,000 to run the women's club this season. And they were only looking at money coming in of approximately £28,000. So I get it from a money perspective that this is a difficult decision, but this has not been handled very well by anyone, by the club. The FA's statement in response was, if I'm being honest, pretty pathetic. I have no idea what they're doing at the moment, but I hope that they are doing everything they can to support at least the players and the staff that have been affected. But it's not great for the league, mate. We don't want to see this sort of thing going on. We don't want to see this sort of thing going on. The women's football in England is continuing to grow, and we look at, we talk so much about the clubs like Man City, Arsenal, Chelsea, and the investment that they're putting into their clubs. But unfortunately, it's not the same across the board, and Notts County are clearly an example of if you don't have that backing and you don't have those resources, then actually they may not be the only club that are vulnerable. You know, we could be looking at other clubs going down that road. I certainly hope not, and I have no inside knowledge, so I don't want to start worrying people. But you know, if Notts County are going, there is no reason why other clubs couldn't either. So yeah, it's very, very sad. Very, very sad. I know, you know, one or two of the players, Carly Telford in particular, I know her quite well, and I know that she's devastated about this. And you know, it's now, I hope the FA can find an exception and allow them to join other clubs. The problem is as well, mate, though, is there are only 9 other clubs. There are not loads of positions available. A lot of these teams have got their squads. They've got the players that they want. Even if the FA say, yes, you can join WSL clubs, sounds really awful, but the WSL clubs might not need them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the only thing about this is, temporarily, it's the spring season, so there's no real trophy that you're playing for. So I get the short term, but yeah, if we're looking long term right now, that there's going to be a real issue right now. And you know, it's even harder to ask these players, well, you can go to another country and play. Well, who wants to go to another country and play? It's not exactly that easy to do it to begin with. So, and as we've already mentioned, the transfer window is closed. So yeah, this is a bad spot. It's really,
yeah, it is.
Not
it is.
Good times right now.
Not at all. Not at all. Well, look, we could talk about this for ages, and I don't want to kind of get people too down. I think it was an important subject to cover. I hope that there can be a resolution to this. I hope that those players can in some way be supported until they can find other clubs or find employment elsewhere, and the coaching staff and the staff behind the scenes as well. I wish them good luck, and I wish them all the best, because it is a good club. There's some good people working there, and there's some really good players there as well. So hopefully they can get themselves sorted out. We should probably move on, mate. And I think that the next place to go would be the UEFA Women's Champions League. We had the first legs of the semi-final take place this past weekend. It was Barcelona hosting PSG and Manchester City Women hosting Lyon. Maybe we should start with Barcelona PSG. Must confess, I didn't get a chance to see this one, but PSG are one of those teams that you never really know what you're going to get. We saw them lose the first leg in Germany to Bayern Munich in the quarter final, and then absolutely hammer them in the second leg to progress. I thought Barcelona might provide a bit of a banana skin, but really good result for them. 3-1 away, Christian, Shirley Cruz and Marie-Laure Dely all on the score sheet. I don't see Barcelona being able to overturn that one. I think that PSG have probably booked their place in the final.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one 100%. I mean, you talk about, we're never sure what type of team PSG will see, or PSG will throw at us. I mean, they've had some intriguing domestic decisions as well, through, you know, not just this year, but in the last couple of years as well. But I think that first leg against Bayern, that really kind of kicked them in the pants a little bit to say, hey, you know, we can't take our foot off the gas right now. You know, that was the last 8. You know, one more little slip up and pretty much the season's over for them. I mean, you know, you look at it, it's always going to be Lyon. You always have to beat Lyon. You have to gear up for that one game. And, you know, when you don't have that motivation to play in the biggest club competition in the world and what have you. So, you know, they thrash them, as you say, in the second leg, put in a strong performance on the road in the semifinal first leg. Yeah, I think we could just allude right to the other semifinal. It's going to be an all-French final. I have no issue saying that.
No, I don't think I do either. I think I was quite public in saying that I think Lyon have done the job in Manchester as well. I think before we move on to that game, a big credit to what's going on at Barcelona at the moment. You know, first semi-final. They're not out of it yet. Of course, they're not. They could go to PSG and completely surprise us and to overturn that deficit. But regardless of that, nearly 13,000 packed into their stadium at the weekend. Complete sellout. And for a club that had never reached this stage of the competition before, you look at what they're doing, and we've said it before on this show, the Spanish league and the Spanish teams are starting to make inroads, and give it a few years and we might be talking about an FC Barcelona in the final or maybe even as champions, because they are taking things seriously now, and there are other clubs in Spain as well who are starting to follow suit. And Yeah, I like what they're doing there, and I've seen Barcelona a few times. They play some really good football. They've got some technically gifted players. I think that when you come up against a team like PSG, though, who, as we know, have spent well in certain areas, they've got some world-class players in that team. It might just be that this was a step too far. But big shout out to what Barcelona are doing, because they've produced some really good results this season. No bigger than beating Rosengard in the quarterfinal, of course. But you mentioned the second semi-final, Man City against the champions Olympique Lyonnais. Same scoreline, 3-1. And I have to say, mate, I was at the Academy Stadium. And the one thing that you have to do when you're playing against Lyon is you have to be tight, you have to be organised, and you have to keep them out for as long as you can. Didn't quite go to plan for City, because Saki Kumagai was putting the ball in the back of the net from the penalty spot inside a minute after, I have to say, a fairly harsh handball against Carly Lloyd. But I've seen them given, it was given, and as a result of that, it made Man City's job very, very difficult.
Yeah, no, I mean, when you're getting up fired up for a match like that, and fair play to City, actually. I saw some of the promotional tactics they were doing in leading up, scarfing the city, trying to get the word out, and it looked like a very, very full Academy Stadium for that. When you have all that energy come in and then bang, that quick go in a deficit, and then Lyon is Lyon. They just hammer you. They continue to pile on the pressure, and they make your life miserable for that 90 minutes because they've got weapons all across the field, and that's exactly what they did. And for City, a team that's been dominating over the past, what you could say, 18 months or so, I mean, this is maybe for them, this is something that they'll need to kind of motivate themselves for the FA Cup final. But giving up three at home, you don't have much of a chance trying to turn that around, especially going really. I think we can go ahead and safely say Lyon is the best women's club in the world, and we've been battling with this for some time, but I think just over the consistency, you're not turning that one in France.
No, I'm with you, and for me, no question, they are the best team in the world. They were scintillating at times, mate. I think City, they did really well to respond to that Kumagai penalty. Kosovare Asllani scored the leveler not long afterwards, but they had to, watch Lyon possess the ball for very long periods. And in truth, this isn't a harsh comment. City have never come up against an opposition of the level of Lyon. When you look at what they have in the WSL, they are the dominant team in the WSL at the moment. When you look at the teams they faced in the Champions League, I would never in any way say that they've had an easy route. But they've played Zvezda of Russia, and they've played the two Danish clubs, Brøndby and Fortuna Høring. So none of those three you would consider as a women's football force. They haven't played a Wolfsburg, a Bayern, a Lyon, or a PSG before. So this was something completely new to them. So I think it's credit to them that they were able to level up. It's a credit to them that they are not completely out of the tie, because 3-1 is a deficit that can be turned over. They weren't smashed 5 or 6-0. But I think with the quality that Lyon have, even if City can go to France and score and make it interesting, I still think Lyon will go through, because I just don't see them overturning that one.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. I mean, look, you can try and hit him early, try and get that early goal within 15 minutes, and I think that will not only help your cause, but I think it hampers it, because then they'll make Leon play the rest of that match. And I mean, you saw it in person, you've seen it multiple times. We see it here. And by the way, nice little shout out to ESPN3 for streaming the match, because we could actually watch Champions League on a viable and legal stream for a, it's not going to be the first time, but it's a very rare occasion. So shout out to the mothership for helping us out there. But look, if you nudge the beast, they're going to hurt you.
It's interesting you raised the ESPN3 broadcasting the game to the United States. In the United Kingdom, we have a media blackout between 2:45 p.m. and 5:15 p.m. to ensure that people are attending matches across the country. For that reason, there are no broadcasts of football in this country on television, online, anywhere. So people in the United Kingdom couldn't actually watch Man City against Lyon. Everyone else could because Man City was streaming it on their Facebook page. So anyone outside of the United Kingdom could access that stream on their Facebook page. But those of us in England and the UK were unable to. Now, for me, who was at the game, absolutely fine. Not a big deal to me. However, for all those other people, Man City fans, women's football fans in this country, what a blow for them not to be able to see that game. Man City's first UEFA Women's Champions League semi-final against, as we've described, the best club in the world, and they've not been able to watch it. It's absolutely bonkers. Common sense needs to prevail. I tweeted it out. Common sense needs to prevail in these situations. I understand they have media blackouts for the men's game, but the men's game is not the women's game. They need to be treated as separate. And it would have been a massive opportunity to gain interest in the women's game in this country if they'd made that game available. I'm sure a lot of people will have watched it if it was available to them. And the reality is that it wasn't. It was blacked out because of the broadcast ban that we have in this country between those times that I mentioned. And no one in the UK could watch it, which is stupid. It's absolutely stupid. And I think it's a massive shame because they saw two teams, or they missed out on seeing two teams. They gave everything for 90 minutes. They missed the football that Lyon play. They missed the battling qualities of Manchester City because of a stupid rule that exists that affects the men's game. And they need to sort that out. They need to have a look at that.
And I'm curious, mate. I haven't looked at the kickoff time yet. Is it going to be the same time this coming Saturday?
No, we're all right for the second leg. The second leg kicks off in the evening, so I hope that if that one is being streamed, I don't think there's any details yet as to what the situation will be for those of us in the UK. I know that ESPN3 again is carrying the game for you in America, so that's great. That's really great that you get to see that. No idea what the situation is for the UK at the moment, but it's an evening kickoff. I think it kicks off at 7:45 UK time. On Saturday evening, so falls outside of that window. So if it is available on a stream, we should be able to see it. But a ridiculous situation that we found ourselves in, where everyone else could watch it and we couldn't. So something that needs to have a something that needs to be had a look at for future rounds, hopefully. But I think we'll finish off UEFA Women's Champions League there, mate. Well, we'll finish off talking about it. But I did get some reaction after the game from Steph Horton and from Ada Hegerberg. I know Ada Hegerberg has been on a couple of times, but Ada Hegerberg obviously speaks English. She was the first player that came out into the mix zone after the game, so it made sense to speak to her. So apologies that we haven't had any other players from Lyon for a little while. We obviously had Alex Morgan on after the second leg against Wolfsburg. But we will try and get different players. But Ada's obviously very fluent in English, so it kind of made sense to get her. So here's Steph Horton and Ada Hegerberg giving their reaction to the game.
I think we're obviously a little bit disappointed with the three goals that we conceded, and we could be better with the ball, but I think, look, it's past as half time and we go out there and we try and do an even better performance, and it'll have to be the best performance that we've ever produced for Man City. But credit to Lyon, they took their chances, but I think we credit ourselves as well. We try to stay in the game, we try to do the right thing, what this football club's about, and we go there with a little bit of hope.
In the second half, you did seem to come more and more into the game, and you very nearly pulled some goals back there.
Yeah, of course. I think, look, they had three chances. KB maybe made a save off another one, but it wasn't as if they were opening us up every single time. So I think for us, we've just got to recover as well as we possibly can and look forward to next Saturday. And we know it's going to be a massive game for us, and the odds will be against us. But I know what this team's about, and it's always about being together and making this club proud. And hopefully, we do that.
Has it been tough for City, because you're not used to being the underdogs in the game, having your team really coming at you like Lyon did early on? Is that a factor?
No, I think obviously the decision in the first half, in the first minute, kind of kills the whole game. And I think from then on it was all about trying to start again and trying to get back in the game, which fortunately we did. Through Corsa's goal, but I think, look, Lyon are the current champions, and we were, of course, going to be underdogs. It's our first season and our first semi-final, so that tag underdogs is one that we didn't really take notice of. We just wanted to come here and play the way that we normally play, and unfortunately they stifled us a bit.
It's a big crowd next week and a tough task, but you're a group of players who, not just with your club, with your country, you've shown you can perform in those situations.
Yeah, of course, that's what this competition is about, playing in front of big crowds against the best teams. And look, we've got big game players, we've got a lot of experience in our team as well, maybe not at Champions League level, but in national level they used to play in big games. And we've just got to make sure that we stick together and play the football that we know we can and up our performance again.
It's a great physical team, City, but I think we stood up against them. We scored three great goals. So, really nice first leg for us.
And also you took it to them from the start. I mean, even before the penalty, you'd had a shot cleared off the line. Without a tactic to really tear into them early?
I think it's always important to get a good start in the games for us to really get an impact in the way we play. It's important to start up well, and when we score as well, it always gets us floating. But they got to create a lot of chances as well, so we need to stay concentrated, not to be too arrogant in the way we play, but try to do as best as possible and every time.
And of course you responded well to the equaliser as well. You got back in that very quickly, back in the lead.
Yeah, obviously that was important as well. They scored just after, so the ball went a bit, changed a bit owner for a while, but I think in the end we win deserved.
Looking forward to the second leg, another big crowd, and like against Wolfsburg, you've given yourself a good lead to defend.
Absolutely. So now we got another game to finish. It's going to be a great game in Parkwell. It's going to be a lot of fans, a lot of supporters, I think at least 20,000. So we love these games, and it's also a huge clash for the women's football, so it's going to be exciting.
How different was today, Ada, to the Wolfsburg game? You knew about Wolfsburg because you played in the final last year, never played against Man City.
Yeah.
How different was it today?
New experience, but still we played a lot against England with the national team, both France, me and with Norway. So there are a lot of English players there as well. But still, it was a new experience because it's been a while since Lyon played the English team. So I think it was a good experience as well to see the different styles of football meet together with the top great players. So getting a result like we had today is perfect, really.
What do you have to do differently next week? Obviously, you had the two-goal lead from the quarterfinal against Wolfsburg. You then had the home leg. They started very well, obviously won that game. What do you have to do next week differently to ensure that you come out victorious in that game?
Start out well, like we did today. Be aggressive, try to get them high in the pitch, but also we need to improve the last passing a bit better. Today we played a bit more long balls than we usually do. If we could manage to get our midfielders with their butt against the goal and to find the last pass, that would be great as well. So there are a lot of things we need to develop, but all in all, we had some good periods.
Obviously, when things, they worked very well today, but the options that you have on the bench as well, obviously Eugenie came off the bench today and scored the third goal. That's important for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah.
If things aren't going well, you know you have options off the bench to change a game.
Eugenie did really well coming in today. Found her easily with the movements, everything, and we work out really well together, so I know how to find her, and she scored a goal as well, and that means a lot to her, and it means a lot to us.
So that was Steph Horton and Ada Hegerberg. JJ will move on. NWSL. Now, this has all kicked off while I've been away. I've seen bits and pieces, so I think this one's over to you, mate. Obviously, the big talking point in the lead-up to the competition starting, Marta. The speculation had been going on for a number of weeks. Fair play to the guys at Woso Weekly. They were the first ones to break the news on social media that Marta was linked with the club. She did join. She made her debut this past weekend in a 1-1 draw against the Washington Spirit. Big move for the league, big move for Marta, big move for Orlando.
Yep, I mean, this is the telltale sign that they're going for. I mean, they've got 2 years, this year, next year, with Marta on board, obviously with Ali Krieger, with Ashlyn Harris, we'd have to expect Alex Morgan now will be coming back. Hey, by the way, nice little reunion of the 2011 Western New York Flash WPS champions team with Marta Morgan as well as Ashlyn Harris in goal. Kind of had to think about that one for a second there, but I was like, oh, okay, we're gonna get to see a little bit of a renaissance, if you will. But yeah, no, look, they're going for it right now. They have to win. I mean, we also heard the announcement that the final is going to be held in Orlando at their new digs. So you know, it's big. You're not going to get a whole lot from this past weekend's match. Because, look, I mean, she arrived in Orlando, what, maybe 36 hours before they kicked off. They had this big whole introductory press conference, maybe had like, what, a half session with the team, a session at most, which really, as we all know, the day before a match is just a walkthrough than anything else. No one's going in 50-50s or anything like that. And, you know, straight off the plane 36 hours later and getting, you know, what, 30 minutes out of it, did create a couple of chances. I think it'll take time for her to really get the understanding of her teammates and vice versa. But, mate, as we all know, she is a game changer. It doesn't matter how many years she's been in the game, doesn't matter how old she is, she can still take this game by the scruff of its neck and change it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Great to see her back in America. I'm sure she will light it up as she settles over the next few weeks. I mentioned Washington Spirit, and before we move on to some of the other games that have taken place, Washington Spirit have been in the headlines while I've been away, and you can maybe shed a little bit of light on this one. Mallory Pugh has announced that she will be leaving, or has left, UCLA, the college that she has been attending for the last few months, and is going to go pro. Now, the team that currently is in the driving seat with Mallory Pugh is the Washington Spirit, because they are the team who have the top position for any US allocated players coming into the league who are not attached to a club already. So if Mal Pugh was to enter the league, the destination as it stands would be the Washington Spirit. Now, according to Grant Wall, who broke the news while I was away, Mal Pugh is not necessarily overly keen on going to the Spirit. So perhaps you can shed some light on what the situation is at the moment, mate.
I mean, we don't have, at the time of recording, any new news. But there's a lot of moving pieces right now. The sources are saying that, you know, the Thorns are the only real destination that Mallory Pugh wants to go to. She wants to stay on the West Coast, obviously from Colorado, went to school for a couple of weeks, really, in Los Angeles, wants to stay West Coast. They've offered trades to the Spirit to try and gain that number one allocation, including what one source says, multiple national team players. The Spirit have denied, either those allegations or denied saying that they wanted to take those players. This is not the only war that's going on right now over Pugh. Apparently Nike and Adidas are putting up big sums of money to gain her signature. So that's going to be something to keep an eye out. But also, I guess in the short or long term, whether this is true or not, if it's not going to be NWSL, it's going to be France, whether it's PSG or Lyon. So, you know, that, as they say, more on this when it becomes available. But that's really all that we can tell you right now. But yeah, Mallory Pugh is turning professional. And I have to do say, this is putting the journalist hat off and putting the fan hat on. Mate, I really wanted to see her play for UCLA. Her and Jesse Fleming on the same team together, plus a bunch of U-17 internationals that were going to be going there, that was going to be a really good UCLA team to watch. And I'm a little bit disappointed.
Actually, yeah.
Not a little bit. I'm a lot disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, as someone who is a bit of an outsider looking in with the college system, I'm a big believer that if you have the opportunity to have a college education, you should always take it, regardless of your status as a pro athlete, because you never know what might happen in your career. And I think it's always important to have something to fall back on. But with Mallory Pugh, we're talking about big sums of money that she's potentially going to earn through endorsements and whichever club she ends up going to. So financially, I understand it makes sense, complete sense for her. She's going to earn a lot of money. She's going to be a superstar. She's already high profile at the age of 18. So I get it. I do completely get it. My disappointment comes from, I think if you have that opportunity to be a, you know, to get a college education, to live the college lifestyle as well, I think that's always important. But, you know, I wish her well, and I hope that the people who are advising her think put her first, you know, and not just chase the dollar. I hope that they kind of create the best opportunity for her career. So wish her well. But moving on to some of the other NWSL fixtures, mate. North Carolina Courage got a good win on their debut at home. Dabinia scoring a header in a 1-0 win over Portland. Good result for them. I think people are looking at North Carolina and Portland as probably the front runners for the Championship Shield. I didn't see the game, unfortunately. I don't know if you did, but regardless, good pickup, good 3 points for them.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're the same type of team that they were last year. They are going to be north and south. They're going to bombard the other goal with attempts. I think in their opening match, the stats came out as North Carolina attempted 37 shots against the Spirit, converted one. So their shooting percentage is going to be very minuscule right now, but a couple of clean sheets in the bag is always a strong start to any season. And Dabinia was fun to watch. I mean, I haven't really watched a lot of her up until this point, but she was fun to watch in that game over Portland. Even attempted a bicycle kick that just missed off after like a pretty odd sequence of ping pong balls inside the 18, but she was able to nearly latch onto it. But yeah, I think that's going to be a nice little addition to a team that's already, you know, they've already got the title above them already. They have to go try and chase another one, but good start for them. I think that they're just picking up right where they left off.
Yeah, interesting. When I saw the lineup, it looked like Dabinia is playing more of a kind of attacking central role, whereas for Brazil, we've seen probably more in a wider area. But yeah, she did look exciting in the highlights that I saw. Unfortunately, I missed the game live. Don't want to go through like game by game, otherwise we'll be here for a while, mate. But I guess another interesting one was Seattle overcoming Houston. Houston obviously got a very good result in the opening week against Chicago. Houston are, I think we said it at the start of the season, in our season preview, I don't really know what to make of Houston week on week. One week they're brilliant, the next week they can be pretty poor, and this weekend they were pretty poor.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they were torn apart left, right, and center. Five goals conceded, you never want to do that. And really, it's this almost kind of spitting image from a year ago, where they open up, ironically enough, against Chicago. It wasn't 3-0 this time, it was 2-0, but a strong statement victory, and then they lay an egg. I mean, there's no other way to say it. They played awful against Seattle. Shape wasn't there. They allowed Fishlock to really do whatever she wanted in the midfield, and then Pino comes and hits a cracker with the left foot. I mean, it's great to see her. You know, it's not anything unnew to us. She's always got that up her sleeve, but it's good to see that she's enjoying the game as she has done and is playing without, you know, any sort of limited thoughts due to injury. So good result for them. I thought that they played well in their opener against Sky Blue, but Sky Blue did enough to get a draw out of it. So 1-0-1, and yeah, no, it's early goes in this league, and as you said, we could go on and talk about every result, but look, if a team is scoring goals early on, that can only mean that things are going to be well later in the season.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Julie Ertz, different name, same goal threat that she's had as Julie Johnston. She got the winner in the game that they had, the Chicago Red Stars had against FC Kansas City, and from what I saw in the highlights, that was quite a one-sided game, with Chicago creating more of the chances, and didn't look like, although I did see Nicole Barnhart make an unbelievable save in that game as well. So credit to FCKC, obviously, you know, stayed in that game for as long as they could, but Juliet's with the goal that was decisive in that one. And I think the only one that we haven't mentioned, mate, is The Boston Breakers had to wait a while for their first win last season. They've got that first win already. They put in a decent display against Sky Blue FC, a very decent Sky Blue FC side with some really good attacking players. But they managed to shut them out and they won 1-0 thanks to a goal from Natasha Dowie. That will be good for confidence for the Breakers because, as we said last year, they had to wait a little while for that first win.
Yeah, it will be. And I think, you know, now the team is starting to take shape. Obviously, as we know, a couple of pieces still yet to unfold. But Rose Lavelle plays in a peach of a ball to Tesh Dowie, and she does what she does, and she finishes. I mean, you look at her goal-scoring rate with a team that's 4 goals in 9 total matches. As a striker, you want to be scoring, and she's scoring. Midge Purse rattles the bar. Just after the hour mark, they probably had a couple of other looks that could have gone in. Shot at the end for a penalty. Sky Blue didn't get it. Would a draw have been a fair result? Maybe, but I think that was Boston's 3 points to have. And that's the difference from last year, you know. Boston might be able to close out some of those matches. They didn't have very many leads last year, but, you know, this time around, they might be able to close out some of those. So good to see that they got off on the mark rather early.
Yeah, they've got game changers this year, haven't they? I think the difficulty that they had last year, I looked at it and it was, I don't know, it was a team that had some decent players in, but there was never really, other than maybe one or two, there weren't many players that you kind of felt could produce something out of nothing. And they've got a player who will run her socks off in the number 9 role in Natasha Dowie, and I thought Adriana Leon did really well on the right side of a front three. I thought she played well, she looked lively. The one that impressed me, and it will be no surprise to people, was Rose Lavelle. Kind of played almost like in a roaming position behind those front three players, and she makes that midfield tick, and she was very, very good playing in that midfield role. And I thought Abby Smith in goal as well. You know, Sky Blue were restricted to only a few chances, but when they did have chances, they were good chances, and Abby Smith was there to kind of clean things up. So I thought it was a good day at the office for Boston.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, you know, it's a lot of things still to come. Obviously, as we know, our contributor Emily Harvey is still a few weeks away. That's just rough, man. I know she was coming back from her previous injury and then breaks her jaw right before the season starts. But, you know, we wish that she has a very speedy recovery and gets back onto the field, because, I mean, you know, 4 through 10 in this league could be a crapshoot at the end of the day. But come the day, Boston could, you know, they're a team that could challenge. Not going to say that they will, but they could.
If all the pieces fall into place and all the stars align, you never know, mate. You never know. That's the beauty of the NWSL. Anything can happen. But I think we will round it up there, mate. I think we've covered every single team. We'll keep tabs on every week. We'll keep tabs on the league week by week when we do these shows. But I think we'll have a little break. And when we come back, we will talk about World Cup qualifiers, because the draw was made in Switzerland this week for the European qualification phase. So we'll come back after a break and have a little chat about that.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So welcome back. JJ, as we discussed before the break, the qualifying groups for the World Cup in France in 2019 took place this week in Nyon in Switzerland. And looking at the 7 groups of 5 teams, the top-seeded sides should all comfortably go through, in my view. I think it's always pretty straightforward for the top-seeded teams, but it's always interesting to see who might finish behind them. We're not going to go through every group, because otherwise we'll be here for a while, but we're going to try and pick out some of the major talking points. I guess from my perspective, England were drawn into Group 1. They are alongside fellow British team Wales. Those two sides, of course, met in qualifying for the 2015 World Cup. England won home and away in those two matches. But the two sides have some horrible journeys. They've got to go to Kazakhstan, Bosnia and Russia. That is about as bad as it gets in terms of travel, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely murder. I mean, you and I were discussing prior to recording, and if you're not even a fair weather fan of the game. If you are a diehard supporter, I mean, those are three of the four. We're obviously taking Wales out of the equation because what you told me, that's just maybe an hour and a half drive for some, maybe even just a step or two over the border. But, you know, it's going to be a hard convince to send anybody to Russia, to Bosnia, or to Kazakhstan just because of the pure travel in and of itself. I mean, Kazakhstan, they're technically not even in Europe. They're in Asia, but they're in UEFA. Russia, you never know where that match is going to be played. It could be absolutely frigid temperatures. It could be one of those things where it might not be that easy to get to. In Bosnia and Herzegovina, the same thing. But in terms of skill, yeah, I think England have to feel pretty good about themselves. And you know what? I think Wales might actually feel okay with that draw, too. I think if there's any draw that they would like to have had is for skill level, that might have been about it.
Yeah, I saw Jess Fishlock tweet out that it could have been a lot worse, so clearly she wasn't too disappointed. But yeah, the journeys that those teams have got to make, not particularly pleasant. So it'll be interesting to see how that one goes. England, of course, had Bosnia and Herzegovina in their qualifying group for Euro 2017, managed to beat them home and away, although they were narrow victories. Scotland and Switzerland are certainly the two standout teams in Group 2. That'll put Erin Cuthbert and Ramona Bachmann against each other, of course, both at Chelsea. The group that stood out for me was Group 3, and that is Northern Ireland, Slovakia, the Republic of Ireland, the Netherlands and Norway. That group has got fun written all over it. You've got the two Irish teams coming up against each other, and you've got the skill, the pace and the talent of the Netherlands and Norway, who of course will open Euro 2017 on the opening day as well, coming up against each other. That one is going to be a fun group to keep an eye on.
I think really almost you could say slots 2 through 4, or maybe even 1 through 4 for that matter, are pretty wide open. I mean, you know, Norway, obviously, if you're going by traditional power, that's the top of the group. But let's face it, come World Cup qualifying, all bets are off. The Netherlands will be interesting to watch because, remember, I mentioned this, it's not a recent show, but it's a fair few shows ago. Hosting a tournament is almost a bad thing as much of a good thing, purely because you don't have the great competitive lead-up to it by playing in these matches. So the Netherlands have had pretty much a full cycle in terms of the qualification for the Euros, where they haven't played a match that means a whole lot. And now, you know, starting really this July, they're going to be thrown right into the thick of it, playing 3 quality matches in the Euros, potentially more, and then you're going to be playing 3 other very good teams at home and away. That's no disrespect to Slovakia, but, you know, that's tough. That's a tough group to call because, as you said, there's a lot of fun written all over it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Martin Sjogren of Norway coming up against Colin Bell at the Republic of Ireland. I think that's going to be a fun matchup. Colin obviously took over the Republic of Ireland a little while ago, and yeah, after his exploits with Frankfurt and some of the jobs that he's had, I'm hoping that he does a good job with the Republic of Ireland. Group 4, Denmark and Sweden drawn with each other again. They've been drawn in previous qualification groups together. They will face off again. Two very interesting sides. We know the qualities that they've got from back to front. I don't see them really being challenged, if I'm honest, by any of the other teams, Ukraine, Hungary and Croatia. Ukraine on their day can create problems for teams, no doubt about that. But Denmark and Sweden, the two teams that certainly stand out for me in that group. Group 5, Germany, Iceland, Czech Republic, Slovenia, Faroe Islands. I think Germany and Iceland will be the leading teams in that. I mean, the pots are pretty reflective of the teams. I mean, it's pretty obvious, and I know it's not exactly it's a captain obvious statement, isn't it? It's the top two pots are always the two teams that are pretty much going to lead the way, and it's for everyone else to try and catch up and maybe cause the odd upset here and there. But I don't see Germany and Iceland being overly challenged in that group. Group 6 is the one I think you wanted to talk a little bit more about, wasn't it? Moldova, Portugal, Romania, Belgium and Italy.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously you remove Moldova from the equation, but look, in terms of Euro qualifying, this is 4 of the top 17 teams from that qualification group. Obviously, Portugal and Romania in that playoff, Portugal getting through on away goals in that home and home. But, you know, this is one that I have this feeling, you know, you have Italy as the technical top-seeded team. Belgium, as you and I both know, they're a team that they have a very high ceiling, and they're nowhere even close to getting there. I think that they have a lot more to give, and I think perhaps maybe with a little more seasoning, they could be the team that might even come out of this group directly. And then you can't count out Portugal and Romania, and I think Italy, you know, this is the light that's starting to unfortunately fall a little bit. This was a team for a long stretch that they were the ones that were knocking on the door when the World Cup was just 16 teams, and they were just always missing out. And, you know, they fought the U.S. right till the bitter end in the 2011 Intercontinental Playoff. But I don't think that they have the muster enough to get through this group. I really do think it's going to be Belgium winning it, and then either Portugal, Italy, or Romania vying for that second seed. And remember, also, only four of the seven second-place teams move on to the playoff semifinals. So that's something to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting group, isn't it? Because you've got Romania as the third seed in that group, yet Romania were beaten by Portugal in the playoff for the Euros. I agree with you about Italy, although Italy did recently give England a very good game here in a warm-up game ahead of the Euros at Port Vale Football Club. That was literally just before I went away on holiday. And as you say, Romania, they were very, very close to qualifying for the Euros themselves, lost that playoff game to Portugal that I've just mentioned. So, yeah, that one's wide open, and I think that one will be an interesting one to keep an eye on as well. I think you make some good points there. And finally, Group 7, Spain, Austria, Finland, Serbia, Israel. That one should be really a walk in the park for Spain with the way that they are developing. Austria should finish runner-up, although Anna Signal, the Scotland coach at the moment, will be leaving her post after the Euros and be taking over at Finland. So brings a lot of experience, brings a winning mentality, having just taken Scotland to the Euros. So that'll be an interesting one. I don't see Serbia and Israel offering much in terms of competition, but those three teams that we mentioned, Spain, Austria and Finland, will be the teams leading the way in that group. So that rounds that off, JJ. We'll obviously keep tabs on those groups as and when they kick off. They will commence after Euro 2017, so around September, October time. And I think we'll wrap it up there, mate, for this show. Just one very quick thing that I forgot to mention earlier on in the show. Over here in England, we had the PFA Awards earlier this week. The PFA Awards are awards that recognise players in both the men and the women's game at the end of the season. The awards are voted for by peers from within the game. And last year, we had Izzy Christensen on the show. She won the PFA Women's Player of the Year last year. This year, it was rather unsurprisingly won by Manchester City Women's Lucy Bronze. I think she won it for the second time. So congratulations to Lucy. And the PFA Young Player of the Year was won by Birmingham City's Jess Carter, who is developing into a very fine young prospect, and I'm sure we'll be knocking on the door, I think, England honours soon enough. So just wanted to round off very quickly there, mate. So thank you very much, as always, for joining me, pal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thank you very much, listeners. We'll be back next week, actually. We have a one-to-one interview with former Canadian international Kaylin Kyle. So keep an ear out and an eye out for that one. So until then, we'll catch up with you soon. Take care and bye-bye.